Hello and welcome to Disrupting the Degree, the education marketing podcast. I'm Stephen Cleary from Carnival Content with
Zeynep Fayez
and Zeynep Fayez from The Brand Education.
This podcast is all about higher education with industry trends, experts and practical tips across the student experience, brand and marketing.
In this episode of Disrupting the Degree, we're joined by Simon Thomas, course leader for fashion business and marketing at the University of South Wales. We'll be looking at blended learning, innovation, and supporting new students.
Hello, Simon. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me along. It's nice to make contact with the outside world. Joking.
Real human contact.
Yeah.
but not in person, no. Unfortunately.
No, that's to come.
Yeah. Could you just start us off by giving us a brief overview of your career so far, including the record shop that you used to own, which I used to spend all my student loan in?
Yeah, no problem at all. But this is a half hour podcast, isn't it?
Sorry.
I've done a lot of things in my life. For the past 6 years, I've worked in education, mainly specializes in marketing, to where my education background and career, to some respects, sits. I have run record shops. Stephen was a patron of that record shop. It was 21 years, 10 years I ran it. My wife had it before me. I've worked in fashion public relations and marketing for 10 years of my career as well. The core career that I've had has been supplemented by a lot of entrepreneurial activity. So I've set up food festivals. I won in 2015, the British Street Food Award for the best street food event in the UK with one of the events that I used to run that attracted 14% of the population of Cardiff. I've done pop-up burger bars. I've done pubs. I've done bars. I've done nightclubs. Yeah, I guess that all sort of led up then to me retraining in education, getting a position at the British Institute of Modern Music. Then moving on to the University of South Wales. And I think I've been on staff there now for about 4 years. This is my second year now as the course leader of the business and marketing fashion course. But I think at the heart of it, it's always been my passion to work in youth culture. I like things that are at the forefront of culture, be that music, be that fashion, be that literature, be that cinema, or be that through events. So I think, you know, there is a common theme through everything I do, and that's certainly something that then comes through into my approach to teaching and learning.
So you have a strong background in entrepreneurship. So what opportunities do you see to innovate that COVID has provided in the higher education sector?
I mean, I think this question, you can't separate the entire world and education. I think that we have to take some learning from some of the entrepreneurial thinkers like Rees, like Osterwalde. And I think, you know, now is a time to pivot. And I think organizations need to be agile around the changes that they make. I think institutions, be they education or the world at large, I think, you know, unless we can get a little bit of agility in our decision-making, we're not going to survive the changes that are ahead of us. I think the challenge that's been presented by COVID is it's accelerated some of the decision-making that we should be making perhaps by about 5 years. So there are organizations that are not going to be prepared for those changes. So I think really, you know, where we need to adopt entrepreneurship is top management, I guess. People who are giving us direction and making sure that we're in touch with our customer, making sure
definitely
that, you know, in our respect, the customer being the student, making sure that they're receiving the education that they want, the service that they need, the experience that they want. I think if we're making decisions on a longer term plan and continue to go into the future in the same direction we originally were, then things are going to be really tough. Businesses are going to fail. And that probably sounds quite obvious, but I think that, you know, there are institutions and businesses out there that are going to have people sat at the top of the organization that probably got 3 or 4 years left till they retire, and they're thinking, I'm not going to enable these changes now. I kind of want a quiet life till I get through.
Yeah.
But that's not fair for them for the people within that organization, though. So they do need to really take responsibility that it's not just about the end of their career and having an easy life, that they have to make those difficult decisions now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to be clear, this is purely hypothetical. This isn't talking about, you know, any businesses that I particularly know about, but I think you can see that that is going to be the case. But I think you're right. And maybe it's a case of leadership asking themselves, am I the person to take this organization forward?
I also think it's quite important then universities to be thinking of themselves as commercial entities. If we're talking about leadership and if we're talking about being entrepreneurial, I think it's so important to have that mindset at the top so it can be passed on to the colleagues.
Yeah, I don't think that this new thinking would devalue the offer at all. You know, education is good. And it's, you know, the staff on the front line that are delivering that aren't going to change at all. You know, knowledge transfer is the same, essentially. It's the medium that we're now thinking about changing. But that's one side of an institution. Of course, the other side then is that leadership. And I think you're right. They do need to adopt some more agile thinking.
Yeah. So I suppose that kind of brings me to the next sort of question that we've got planned. What have you got planned for induction and how is it different to last year?
Well, disappointingly, I guess it's no different to last year. There are things that are mandatory that you need to cover during induction, onboarding for the year, making sure that social groups are integrated, all those things. The only thing that's changed is the medium. And I think for us, there's a question mark over, will this be successful? And my observations are, and again, these are only personal observations, there are generations that are very well adjusted and accustomed to socializing online. I look at my own kids, for example. You know, they don't leave their bedrooms, which is a good and bad thing. They're accustomed to sitting, talking to their friends who are in their own houses, in their own bedrooms, and socializing in that way. So I don't think we're going to struggle in that respect. I think, you know, we've got an audience that is going to be receptive to a digital learning environment. The only thing that's really going to be different for induction this year is perhaps some of the housekeeping stuff, particularly goes without saying around COVID. And I think it gives you an opportunity perhaps just to whittle out some of the chaff, you know, where you might do filler activities. And it just gives you a challenge to perhaps just be a little bit more succinct in the delivery, making sure that everything's essential. It's not a bad thing.
What about the social aspects of induction and sort of welcome week then?
Well, I mean, typically that stuff happens off campus. I can only talk from my own experience, and I don't know if you agree with this, but if I'm put in an environment where social activity is forced, don't feel like I want to participate in it.
Slightly awkward.
Oh, absolutely. Can relate to that.
Yeah, I think everybody can relate to that. And I don't think that that's an aspect that we've got control over. You know, the real engagement and the real social activity is going to happen amongst peers. They're going to go, oh my goodness, how did you cope with that activity? And it's like, I froze up. I didn't feel more uncomfortable in my life. But they'll be doing that in Wetherspoons or a coffee shop or somewhere else. You know, COVID hasn't taken away people's ability to socialize. That is an animal instinct in us. You will find a way to engage with people.
So you mentioned, so from personal observation, you know, the social integration. So what's your sort of viewpoint on this at the moment? How are students socializing at the moment? Is it all kind of virtual? What have you got set up, I suppose?
The other thing I think that's fairly instinctive about us as social beings is that we've never really gravitated towards huge herd groups. We've always created our own small peer groups, which would probably be about five or six people, which luckily under government legislation amounts to a social bubble. So I think people are naturally forming these social bubbles that we're encouraged to encourage in a learning environment. You've got a class of 30, 40 students. They're not going to stay together as a group of 30, 40 students. They will find like-minded people, as you would in an office environment as you would in a typical social environment, as you would do in a record store, you know, and you'd stick to those groups. And I think that they're naturally just going to form those social bubbles that are necessary for the learning environment under COVID. So I think for us, it's recognizing what's naturally formed rather than pairing them up with people that perhaps they wouldn't naturally form that relationship with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Forced friendship.
Nothing worse. Nothing worse. Well, there are worse things, but it's, you know, for the purposes of this podcast, Steve, it's nothing worse.
Agreed.
Right. Yeah. Moving on. So from your background in retail and e-commerce then, so what inspiration do you think education can take from that?
I have worked in fashion retail. I have worked in music retail. I've worked in the hospitality industry as well. And something that's really interested me about the hospitality industry is perhaps you could track back to 2010 when Instagram launched and businesses were no longer food businesses. They were also content creators. And you'd only survive in that marketplace if you adjusted yourself to social channels. You know, and we're in a position now where I can go and visit my favorite restaurant in San Francisco from my bedroom by going into its social channels. You can engage with its menu, you can engage with its staff, its beliefs, etc.
And essentially, you can't eat the food though.
Can't have it delivered, Simon.
Well, no, I mean, that's one thing that you can't deliver. But I think under COVID, we found that you can eat the food because these brands have set themselves up where people have really, really engaged with them. And you've now got retail packs. So a Bleecker burger in London is now achievable here because they will deliver that through the post and show me how to build it the way they build it.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. You know, so essentially I'm not missing out on anything that I have a belief in. And I think really that's where, when you started, you know, clearly this podcast is going in the direction of questioning how do we deliver that social thing. Social can be delivered very well through digital channels. It just needs to be meaningful. We just need to understand what it is we're trying to achieve with those social channels and make sure that that's delivered to the right customers. You know, it's simple marketing.
I'm just imagining Simon with his VR headset on with a view of the San Francisco restaurant whilst eating his packaged meal that they sent over.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing now?
That's what I do probably 4 or 5 times a day.
I love it.
It's not that difficult to imagine that we will be able to get back into social environments that we're comfortable in with the use of technology.
So what do you think the biggest positives have been then for teaching online and blended learning then?
Engagement. I think you get yourself into a very intimate environment online where you're not distracted by activity that's going on around you, or, you know, it really is a dedicated 15, 20 minutes one-to-one of a meaningful conversation. Meaning you get time to review a student's work beforehand and give them some meaningful feedback. And I think feedback's the most important part of the job for me that we do. You know, knowledge transfer goes without saying, but really what the student needs to hear is, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? How can I improve?
Definitely.
And I think,
agreed, yeah.
Given a situation where it's literally me and the student talking about that very thing, reflecting on activity for some summative, formative feedback is priceless.
So how have you adjusted to blended learning and teaching? How have you found?
I've adjusted very well, thank you very much. It's quite easy, I think, when instinctively and naturally you're a hermit to adjust to these things. But
you're not a hermit, Simon.
No, I'm not a hermit at all. That's me.
Just social creature.
I'm playing to the crowd there, and I apologise. You called me out there, Steve. Well done. It's you know, in all seriousness, things haven't changed. It's just the medium. You still have your own style, your own technique, your own approach to education, and you just make that work with the tools you've got. And the other thing, of course, is it's very difficult for people to find excuses to not show up in this environment. So the other thing that's improved in blended learning is attendance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
That's great. Yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
So you mentioned tools, et cetera. So what sort of tools have you been provided to be able to do your delivery?
We already have, with the VLEs, the virtual learning environments, everything that we need. You know, we've not explored the extent of the Blackboard environment yet. There is facility there for blogs, for wikis, for video conferences. You've kind of got it all there in a package. It's just because we haven't had to use it, you've not really explored the capabilities of it before. People's needs haven't changed. You just need access to information, don't you?
So how do you see this kind of being improved then? I mean, the blended learning aspect, to provide a better experience.
The next challenge for us is to look at these inspirational environments that we've built as universities and being able to replicate that some way in the digital space. And I think it's forgivable that people haven't just thrown money at it, because we need to give it time. There's nobody yet who can tell us how the world will land. So that's where our agility and our resilience comes into play, to make sure that we can continue to provide engaging, excellent educations.
Do you think it's a huge opportunity for a university that does innovate and does create that new university of whatever that will actually look like, to really stand out in a different way to just being one of the top ranked universities in the UK or the world?
In this race, first doesn't always win. And I think that the danger is with technology is that we can make innovations that will appeal to early adopters.
Yes.
And forget about actually that it's later in the curve, in the adoption curve, that we need to consider, which is when it will have a mass audience.
Yes.
So I think the danger is, and I think this is why, you know, we do need to applaud people who are just not bolting at the start gun at the moment, is to wait and see what it looks like for everyday people. Love film. So that was an Amazon Prime innovation. Netflix just sat back to see how the market would play out. They waited until that new horizon was really present. They knew exactly what it is that the audience of today wanted. And they launched, you know, a really, really successful media group.
You don't want to be a Blockbuster.
Yeah.
But also with that analogy though, do you think universities are sitting back and watching the trends and watching what's innovating, what's not innovating? Or do you think that they are reacting to these technological changes? Where do you think universities sit?
I think, you know, from an entrepreneurial point of view, we're into the realms of effectuation. It's a bird in hand principle. You do with what you've got. And that doesn't mean substandard. As I've said, I think there are capabilities around things like Blackboard that have yet to be utilized properly. You know, we've already got the facilities there to deliver a good, engaging education. The bit that's missing there, though, is education isn't the only concern of students. The social aspect that we've discussed is also a very
important part, yeah.
Poignant part of the university experience. And I think that's the bit that we need to focus on. It's the immersive part then that we need to think about, which is perhaps where these future technologies like AI might come into play and offer something that will give us a more connected experience.
So just to bring it back a bit more to the new term, one of our concerns is that students will maybe struggle a bit with mental health. Do you share that concern? And if so, do you think they'll need more support than they would have this time last year?
I think, without trying to detract away from education, I think that's a concern for all of us generally. Yeah. And I think that goes back to this, you know, isolation, stimulation, you know, being as important mentally as it is physically. And I think that the 6 weeks that we did teach during lockdown in a digital environment, I felt connected to people, to my students, where we could have conversations. And I think it's just giving people a little bit more room for the pastoral stuff than just the academic stuff. The danger is that when we start talking about entering a digital environment, we think of everything being cold and robotic.
Yes.
Yes.
And I don't think that's the case because we're still human beings. It's not difficult. Look, you know, I think this is the first time we've met girls, isn't it? You know, we've managed a conversation.
Simon, I've not actually met them. Our relationship is completely through Zoom.
There you go. So it's all virtual, you know, but we've laughed, we've cried.
Well, speak for yourself on the crying part.
It's not that difficult to remain human through a digital environment.
I think that is an amazing point to finish this episode on. Thank you so much, Simon. That's been really insightful and really entertaining for us as well.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. You've been incredibly insightful, as Stephen just said.
Yes, thank you, Simon.
Thank you. It's been great. I've enjoyed it.
In next week's episode, we're joined by Bryce Ives to talk about Torrens, Australia's newest and fastest growing university. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean a lot to us if you'd subscribe. Disrupting the Degree is brought to you by The Brand Education and Carnival Content.